Welcome to Question 4, Organized Resistance. I'm your host, Carol Bruyer. Today is Monday, September 22nd, and we're doing a 9/11 truth show. And
hello?
Hello. Hi, Nicholas. Can you hear me?
Hi, Carol. How are you? Are we on the air?
We are. I was just about to introduce you.
Oh, sorry there.
Well, Nicholas is one of the early 9/11 truth pioneers. He also organized, I think, one of the very first conferences, big international ones, in Berlin back in 2003. And he also helped me with the San Francisco International Inquiry into 9/11. And he was on the early telephone conference calls. Do you remember, Nick, back in the olden days when there were not there very many 9/11 truth websites, just a handful of us, and we were trying to figure out how to cooperate and how to move forward on this back in 2002.
Of course I do, Carol. But, you know, those days are not so long ago. It's, you know, we've really done our best, and we've arrived at whatever we could accomplish so far. You know, I don't know, the odds are so overwhelming against us.
You still feel that way? I can't help feeling, I guess, because I've been doing this continually since 2001, that we've actually have accomplished something, and just the fact that the whole situation is falling apart right now, and that Kucinich is talking about having a Truth and Reconciliation Commission on 9/11, that we've really advanced tremendously. I know at some point I felt like, oh gosh, they don't need me anymore. I could retire because the movement, you know, it's so strong. There's nothing that could stop it at this point.
It was certainly a much larger movement than it was at the beginning, you know, when we were just the isolated skeptics on the, you know, mostly on the internet and just a few hundred of us from the view of it. But I think from the beginning it was clear that most people, or I don't know about most people, but many, many, many millions of people around the world had their doubts about the official story, that's for sure.
Well, I think we have made a tremendous amount of progress, and I know that the recent world polls have shown that most people don't believe the official story of 9/11, particularly outside of the United States. But I think here, obviously, we have the heaviest propaganda, and we have the most obstacles to getting psychological barriers to even looking at the evidence. But I think I'm really heartened by, I know Project Censor, their new 2009 list came out, and in the top 25, I think it should be higher on the list, but just the fact that in the Japanese parliament that they were questioning the official story, and Japan's supportive role in the whole war on terrorism was seriously questioned. And tonight, after you, we'll have Anthony Hall on, who is a professor who spoke out in Canada, and he's also reaching out to a candidate in Canada to push him on the 9/11 issue, and he's had a positive response from the candidate. So hopefully that will help lend the Canadian voice to perhaps the creation of an international inquiry, a more concrete one than the ones that we participated in and organized, the citizen-led ones, I hope. But I think what's also happened, too, is that we, you know, when we started, we just had the internet. We didn't have any videos. We didn't have any books. And now we have much better materials. And I know that you've been very influential in helping to create tools which could give us, you know, more credibility amongst the general public as well as the press. I think our biggest obstacles have been, of course, breaking through to the media and to politicians.
Carol, I think you're really kind. I wish I could be as optimistic as you are. Right now, I just do not see the critical mass building in a population that is outside the already converted. I just don't see it, you know, and I'm afraid, you know, I'm not saying that it's impossible, I just see right now what's happening with the robber barons, utterly consolidating their power over, you know, the financial system, and how this incredible so-called bailout plan, this incredible plunder of the American people, is being undertaken without most people even noticing that it's happening. They certainly will next year. It's going to be clear enough next year, I think, what's happened to them, you know, with the depression that is inevitable as a result of this gigantic plunder of capital. But, you know, I just don't see it, and I don't see it coming anymore from September 11th. I am optimistic about the story coming out about 9/11, especially from, you know, unguessed at whistleblowers and from, you know, revelations that have yet to come. But, you know, I'm really not as confident in the 9/11 truth movement that, you know, you and I both helped to build at the beginning, or both were part of, that it's really going to, you know, be the decisive factor in this.
Well, I know, like during the San Francisco inquiry and the other conference that Kyle organized on 9/11, the public safety in Washington, D.C., there was one aspect of 9/11 which we really didn't go into too deeply because we didn't have that many really good spokespeople about it, and that was the questionable disintegration and destruction of three towers using two airplanes and box cutters. And it seems that we now have a lot of scientists, architects, and engineers and solid physical evidence, which I think if anyone rational looks at it, is in our favor. And this is, I would say, a very powerful bit of information that just by the release of their report before the Democratic and the Republican circuses, it just shows the government the only way they could get away with this is by just sneaking it out so people don't see it or notice it. And that's, I think, one place where the 9/11 truth movement can do something is just amplifying that information. And we've got more tools now, more films, not just even American films, but even the documentaries that are being produced in Italy and Germany and other parts of the world. They're reaching, you know, an international crowd as well as having the impact here. So I think that's really hopeful. And I don't know about more whistleblowers coming out. I think it's pretty sad that Barry Jennings died. I think his testimony is pretty damning of the official 9/11 report. But you know, we don't know anything about the circumstances of his death, or if he's really dead or not, too. So, I just see, and especially since I'm still, you know, very actively involved, I remember there's something that you said that inspired me, you know, years ago when we were talking about this, and you said that our goal was so that everybody knew, so that these guys wouldn't even get served breakfast in the morning. And I think this erosion in public confidence in the powers that be, that has happened. We have seen it happen, you know, over the years. Maybe not directly because of 9/11, but because they have been so criminal and lying about everything. I'm actually thinking that the entire country should be in arms, because they're so flagrantly criminal. I don't see how anyone could go along with this bailout scheme, because it's so overtly criminal for them to support it. Congress or the Senate is outrageous. I mean, I've been just barraged by emails today and yesterday, groups just saying, we've got to organize, we've got to stop this, we can't let them do this.
And yet, you know, Carol, I really want to share your optimism, and I don't want to discourage anybody from organizing whatever they can in opposition to what's happening right now with the bailout and doing their best to bring out what we can still bring out about the truth of September 11th, which I still think is a gigantic teachable moment. So I don't want to be discouraging in any way. And I have to make a confession, by the way, that until now I got held up unexpectedly before this radio appearance. So I've been on a train.
Oh, dear. Are you still on a train, Nick?
No,
are you?
I'm not on a train right now. I am luckily on the sidewalk and walking along, and I hope I can even be understood at this point. So, you know, we can at least have the discussion for the rest of this hour. You know, I have been able to hear what you've said, but, you know, if you heard a lot of subway noises and doors opening and closing, that was as a result of that. I wish, really, that, you know, I don't want to discourage anyone's optimism in this. I don't want to discourage anyone's initiative in this. I have been skeptical for years about demolition as the approach to 9/11 truth, because what I've noticed is that it tends to either convince people or not convince them, and then they're turned off. And, you know, I find it disturbing that the movement for truth, for disclosure, for investigation, and demanding answers to the questions, you know, pointing out how corrupt the investigations are and what a cover-up has been exercised around September 11th, that it's focused so completely in the last few years on the question of demolitions and on nothing else, it seems to me. And how many people have forgotten all the other, what we used to call at the beginning the unanswered questions, the questions that were raised by the September 11th families, you know, that they demanded answers for from the commission and did not get, so that in the end they turned against the commission. I'm disturbed at how completely it's all been forgotten and how completely the focus has come to be on the demolitions question, and also at how weak so many of the arguments for demolitions are. You know, people kind of hope that with demolitions they can simply say the buildings were blown up, the case is closed, we don't need to even discuss anything else about context or the story or the motive, why things happen as they do. And, you know, I'm sorry, right now you can hear there's this truck right next to me with extremely loud music.
Actually, I can't. I can hear you fine, but I don't hear the truck, so don't...
Well, I'm having trouble hearing myself. You know how it is with, you know, with SUVs that go around sometimes with the boom boxes. You know, I have really come to lose faith in the ability of the American people to really see what's going on until it has completely already defeated them, dismantled them, plundered them. You know, I don't want to discourage anybody. I don't want to say to anybody, don't organize, don't do your best, don't fight the best way that you can. That is not why I am here.
Yeah.
But
I do think that we were often, you know, trying to brainstorm about what is the best evidence, and I have come to the conclusion that you know, different facets or aspects of 9/11 are going to resonate with some people and just not resonate with others, and that there does have to be a multi-pronged approach. I know Griffin, in his book 9/11 Contradictions, he actually is gentler than in other books, just pointing out the dramatic contradictions and making it, I think, easier for journalists and politicians to just get a little toehold of 9/11 truth without overwhelming them with too much. Because we've found, you know, psychologically people go into denial, and sometimes it's easier to just lead them gently into the topic and not overwhelm them.
I'm sorry that I'm skeptical about that. I'm because I have a great deal of respect for Professor Griffin and his efforts, but, you know, I really see a kind of big tent approach that he did in the end adopt rather decisively, where he doesn't really contradict anything in the way of evidence that supports his thesis that, you know, is weak. And, you know, I've wondered about, you know, things like trying to emphasize the, trying to make blanket statements like there were no hijackers, there were no cell phone calls. By the way, there probably were very few cell phone calls, but those were on the air phone. But I hear that you're going to a break, so maybe we can discuss that right after this. And I'm almost home, by the way, so that'll be good.
Oh, good. Okay, well...
Online and on demand, this is We the People Radio Network.
Was a time I'll always remember. I could never forget how reality came down around us like some Western movie set. Shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be alright. That's how it felt to be alive after the revolution.
Hello, welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. I'm Carol Brier, speaking with Nick Levice, and that was David Robick singing After the Revolution. And I think, actually, that song is sort of emblematic of what we're facing as a movement in the resistance we get to getting out 9/11 truth. I know, like, in the peace and justice community, they were just shrinking in horror. They just didn't think that the American people could deal with reality of 9/11. And that's why they always... go for, you know, littler things, you know, what else is wrong, and not going for the real heart of the problem. They just think it's just too terrifying for the American public to deal with, and the press. And I think, you know, one thing that we have seen over the years is the erosion in confidence in, which is very well deserved and merited, in not only the government, but also in the media. And I think people are trying to find or create alternatives to news. In fact, I think, you know, this is really the most hopeful sign is the fact that people are trying to figure out what's real and what's true, and even I'd like to ask you, Nick, you know personally, how do you discern what is true? Where do you think the most useful sources of information are in these times right now?
Well, that's a big question, Carol, and it's really very difficult to address. You know, I have my favorite sources of news on the internet that I think tend to have the highest hit rate. You know, that doesn't mean that they're right all the time or even 90% of the time, but that, you know, that give you the best leads. So I like Information Clearinghouse. I like War Story. I like, you know, antiwar.com. has a great many of the stories, you know, and I mean, these are finally coming from the foreign press and from the alternative press, and, you know, from the mainstream press. The ignored mainstream press stories are often the most important of all that we can find. But, I don't want to discourage anybody from organizing in the fashion that they see best, you know, and that's why I've been silent for the last few years. You know, it has a great deal to do with the direction that the 9/11 Truth Movement has taken, that I found very discouraging. The exclusive emphasis on the supposedly slam dunk physical evidence arguments that often are absurd. I think, you know, a very key moment came in 2004 when we were confronted with what is basically misinformation, if not disinformation. The difference is misinformation is simply wrong. Disinformation is intentionally wrong. I don't really care which it is. If it's wrong, it's wrong. You know, when we're confronted with this disinformation about the pods on the bottom of the plane that didn't actually exist, the supposed pods on UA-175, and we suddenly had this video in plain sight financed for hundreds of thousands of dollars worth from unknown sources, to tell you the truth. And, you know, we weren't able to simply reject that. You know, we began to lose the struggle because people already have so much resistance, and then you come along with these ridiculous theses, you know, and you come along with these unprovable theses, you know, that aren't necessarily ridiculous, such as there are no hijackers. Well, go ahead and show it. You can't. You can't. What you can show is that the government is lying every minute of the day. The government has enormous incentives to present disinformation, to present misinformation. You know, and you cannot be certain about, you know, some of the statements that we have made. You know, I think another big one was, you know, what exactly hit the Pentagon. We lose when we go into that debate because, you know, we're not going to get a certainty out of it, you know, whereas we can get a certainty by showing all the ways in which the government, the official story is contradicting itself. And, you know, I think that was a much more powerful approach in the first few years that we have really lost track of since In Plain Sight, since Loose Change, which had so many errors and had to be redone three times before they reduced several errors, but was much cooler. You know, was so cool that people didn't care because they thought this is going to appeal to the youth. That was a problem. You know, we were sacrificing truth for popularity.
Yeah, I understand. We do have a caller from Canada right now. Let me just, Doug?
Hello.
Did you have a question or comment?
Maybe a question and a comment. I just wanted to mention that I have to tell your guests that I'm very optimistic that the issue of 9/11 is going to, it's going to come out mainstream. I think it's just a matter of time. Baby steps towards it through information, civil informationing, and activism through the 9/11 Truth Movement. I think we still we have it right there in our grasp. And I've been doing this myself now for 3 years, and remain highly optimistic that we will see the beginning to the end of all this. One of the big comments that I wanted to mention, as well as one of the things that I've heard of from Ground Zero out of Minnesota, proposition of having a truth reconciliation set up, dealing with what we can do in the future with when all this stuff does go mainstream. And I think part of the problem right now is that I think a lot of people do believe that there is something wrong with the official account of 9/11, but I think a lot of people are just asking themselves, like, what do you do next? And I think this is where we're stuck. And one of the most positive things that I have heard is this is Ground Zero out of Minnesota that is proposed a truth of reconciliation.
I know Michael Andregan. I've seen his film. It's really good. In fact, I want to get it on to 9/11 TV so they could get it out to the community access stations more. It's a very good film. But also Dennis Kucinich has taken this up too, and he just put a letter which is on 911truth.org, which is also calling. for truth and reconciliation.
I heard something about that. Dennis Kucinich, could you tell me more about that?
Well, there's a whole article. He's announced it. He hasn't formally proposed it in Congress, so we don't know the exact details. But he is saying we need to have a truth and reconciliation commission on 9/11. And, you know, I think we have at least, Nicholas, you know, convinced the whole world that the official story is a lie and that they have destroyed evidence and are covering things up. I think that's I mean, unless you're a real extremist.
Absolutely.
We have succeeded there.
You know, I want to agree with that. I think that the majority of the world does not believe the official story, and enough Americans do not believe the official story that it's even possible that we have contributed to delaying the next stage of false terror attacks in the mode of 9/11.
I hope so.
That's entirely.
Get up, stand up. You're listening to We the People Radio Network.
There's some distressing information, sir, which I think should be explained. Just which things have been lost and just what has been gained. Like the thousands of put options bought days before the crash. If the money were collected, it'd make quite a pretty stash. And the only stocks they bought were American and United. Deutsche Bank knows the answer, but the names have not been cited. And is it just coincidence that this firm in the private sector was once run by Buzzy Krongard, now CIA director? And I am left to wonder, as the flames are rising higher, was this our latest Sustania, or another Reichstag fire?
Hello, welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. I'm Carol Brie, speaking with Nick Levice, and we also have another caller, and I do invite people to check out 911truth.org, which does have the article about Kucinich's proposal to have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission on 9/11, which I think is a great idea. John from Pennsylvania, did you also have a question or comment?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah. You're on the air.
Oh, hey, Carol and Nick. How you guys doing? It's John Gold.
Oh, hi, John.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. Nick, I just wanted to comment on a couple of things that you said. You know, we've all been there. Those of us who've been doing this a long time have gotten to the point where, you know, it seems hopeless. And it's a very difficult time to get through. You know, we try so hard, and we don't see many people, or we don't see as many people as we would like, the majority or, you know, what you were talking about. And it gets very frustrating when you see the media continue to focus on, you know, the fringe of the movement. It gets to be very frustrating. However, I do see that there is hope in that. You know, this past anniversary, I went to New York City, and several family members came out. You know, there were a lot more family members that I had never seen before, and I think that's a good thing. I think, you know, people are starting to wake up to a certain extent. There are people that I've talked to for years who refused to listen, who are now all of a sudden, you know, opening up to a certain extent. But with regards to your comments on controlled demolition, you know, you and I agree. You know how we are on that, Nick. And,
yeah.
You know, I do think that it's a question that needs to be answered. I don't think that it has been adequately answered. I know that there are family members who want that question answered. But, you know, the media has sensitized people. They basically made it so that if you mention controlled demolition, a lot of people, the majority that I talk to, you know, at work, they say, you know, that you're crazy, that you're nuts. If you bring it up, the media has trained people to think that you're crazy if you bring up controlled demolition. Controlled demolition and a missile hitting the Pentagon. You know, and this has taken place over several years. I don't know how many media appearances I've seen where that's all they focus on. In fact, Michael Shermer just said recently that the entire 9/11 conspiracy rests on thermite. And that,
yeah, but
you know,
Shermer is so weak, though. He's intellectually, I don't think he holds up well in a debate. He just debated Richard Gage. But can I just say something that you mentioned, John and Nicholas, about the burnout, the despair, and giving up factor? In my mentor was the film lawyer who did write that book, Doing Democracy, which lays out the stages of social movements. And usually there is a stage where a lot of people do drop out, but the movement evolves into a new direction, and it wins majority of opinion, and it might not have as many people in demonstrations, but you have more people within institutions and different parts of society who are becoming aware and doing things at a different level. And I think this is what we're seeing to some degree with the 9/11 truth movement. We have more professional people, we have more scholarly people, we have, you know, better films, better materials, and we're reaching people that we weren't even able to reach before. So that's what gives me great hope. And like just the fact that we do have firefighters for 9/11 truth, and architects and engineers and pilots, and so many different groups now.
But like Nick was saying, I think, you know, we've lost our roots somewhere. What do you think, Nick?
You know, what I think is when we were focusing on the action of the cover-up, on the government investigation, on the government statements, on the ways in which they were contradicting themselves, we were a lot stronger and we were getting through a lot more clearly, even if there were less people involved. And I think the problem is that that was so complex and so problematic and conflicted, because you were skeptics rather than truth tellers, that there is this enormous pressure to just say, I have the smoking gun, I have the one answer, I have the narrative that is simply true, even if I can't actually know it for sure. And by pushing this, I banish all these questions and uncertainties, and I make it simple. But when we make this story simple, we end up in a niche where a great many people do actually agree, but it doesn't get through to the vast majority. And I think, to tell you the truth, that, you know, with all due respect to the people who are still seeking justice for their own relatives that they've lost, for their friends and loved ones that they lost, you know, and I understand why they continue to struggle and why they must continue to struggle, with all due respect to them, I think we, you know, September 11th as an issue has become largely passé. It's passed into the realm of mythologizing and uncertainty, and it's become just like the JFK conspiracy, which is also obvious. So that in the end, the vast majority are going to doubt the official story of September 11th, but at the same time not commit themselves to an alternative narrative. And again, I don't want to discourage anybody from trying. Maybe they're a lot smarter than me. Maybe they're a lot better than me. Maybe they're a lot more committed than me. But I really haven't seen a way out of this conundrum for the last 2 years.
Do you agree that part of 9/11 truth is not just, you know, accountability and justice for the 9/11 attacks, but it's also about teaching Americans what it means to be a citizen again? You know, part of 9/11, I think, is an educational process that teaches people, you know, how best to be a citizen, you know, to open your eyes, to read, to not pay attention to the mainstream media. And I think that's a big part of it. And I think in that regard, we've succeeded greatly.
Yeah, I would agree with you there too, John. I think that one reason that I became involved was I just felt it was that transformative event that could actually, you know, change people's lives if they were exposed to the basic facts that were being hidden, that it would change lives. And that's one thing that the fact that I don't watch TV and the fact that I am out there in the streets and talking to people and organizing events and seeing this transformation happen and seeing lives transformed. I mean, just Richard Gage, he started Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, but you know, he just stopped his car on the freeway when he heard David Ray Griffin, and it just changed his whole life, and he became, you know, an activist because of it. And I've seen, you know, Richard's kind of an extreme example, because, I mean, I've never seen anybody who's just so committed and devoted and getting on and with so little sleep and still completely energized. But it's not just Richard. There are so many people who just didn't know it. It just opened a whole new, you know, world for them and got them engaged in ways that they just never were before.
Do these people number in the hundreds or the millions?
Well, this is, you know, an interesting question. I know I do things locally because I'm married, I have the kids, I can't go traveling off to all these different places for demonstrations and so forth. But I'm really heartened by the fact that there's so many different groups popping up all over the place doing amazing things. I mean, just following what the activists did in Canada and in Europe for these events and the folks in Australia. It's not like we're in isolation. It's nice to know that, you know, we're not alone. There's more and more of us all over the place from all walks of life, all levels of society. We have another break.
That comes fast.
They do.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Let's impeach George W. Bush. It's long, long overdue. While we're at it, let's make sure to impeach Dick Cheney, too. A pair of world-class criminals like you never seen before. Start impeachment right away and stop another war.
Hello, welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. I'm your host, and I'm speaking with Nick Levice, and we still have John Gold with us from Pennsylvania. And during the break, Nick and I were talking and mentioning sort of the larger movements that I think we still feel very much a part of, which I think we could call the truth movement, but also I really think in some ways 9/11 was an act of fear on the part of a global elite to the growing global justice movement, which is all people just being outraged by the rampant corporate globalization fascist plunder of the planet. And 9/11 was a way for them to just relabel all opposition as terrorists and try to crush that movement, which does seem to be reemerging, and I think hopefully will be stronger than ever. That's what I see. I think we're in a kind of a period of chaos right now where we're under attack on so many different levels. People don't know which issue to work on today, and they know that all these issues are related.
You know, I think what's happened is that whatever 9/11 was supposed to accomplish on behalf of the world system, it has failed. And it has succeeded only in the United States. And it has succeeded in turning the vast majority of the people in the world against this American vision of, constant dominance and globalization and capitalist plunder. I really think it was a desperate move in the first place, and that it has failed, but that's not necessarily going to become obvious. And the focus of history has moved away from this country. And it's going to become very obvious in the years to come that that is what has happened. And, you know, I can only hope that, you know, we do not pay too stiff a price for all to which we have acquiesced in this time as Americans.
Yeah, I think, well, that's, I think, one reason I'm running for Congress is just I think that the only hope really right now for this country, for us to redeem ourselves as a people, is to renounce the criminality of this government and to change policy, reverse direction as soon as possible. And I know I was working, to organize the first World Social Forum and against corporate globalization, you know, way before September 11th happened, and against the World Bank and the World Trade Organization. And there's this doctrine of odious debts, where if you have a dictator who's using all the country's resources to oppress his people and wage war, then the debt that that people incurs is a odious debt that they do not owe to other people. And I think right now, if we allow this government to loot the entire country to finance these horrific, illegal, imperial wars, you know, we're going to be saddled with this huge debt, reparations, whatever. If the only hope, you know, without
and right at this moment,
totally wiped out.
And right at this moment, this debt is being tripled to just cover all the bets that the Wall Street financial institutions have made in the last few years in this desperate effort to find any profit anywhere where it still existed, you know, through the financialization of the economy and through all the derivatives and insanity. And now we're going to pay for all this virtual debt, you know,
yeah.
I think it's pretty much
It's not even in the realm of physical possibility. I mean, I've looked at the monetary system for over a decade. Even before these ridiculous financial derivatives, there wasn't enough wealth on the planet to pay back all the debts. I mean, it's astronomical right now.
No, and that's why we moved into these ridiculous financial derivatives, because it was a way of keeping the game going. It was a way of still inflating the bubble through virtualization. And, you know, now we're at this end stage. All these bailouts are going to amount to nothing. And I really think history has moved past this thing we've called America all this time. And it's going to become very obvious. And about all that America and probably Americans can do is destroy things. I am not optimistic about, you know, the future of this country. And, you know, maybe all we can do is to help to minimize that destruction. Honestly, what do you see Americans as a majority, when we speak of a majority of Americans, what do you see them capable of other than voting for Obama instead of McCain? Do you really see them saying, you know, we're going to overthrow our ruling class, we're going to understand that we've been suckered all these decades with the what word am I allowed to say on this station, by the way? Am I allowed to say the word
to describe the guys in charge? I don't think there's the proper language there.
Am I allowed to say the word that starts with bull and ends with cow dung?
Sure.
That we've accepted all this bull data about how we serve our country by going out and blowing up other countries, by going out and accepting whatever enemy we are told is our enemy, by destroying such large parts of the world, by serving as willing tools of the money masters. You know, I don't see, you know, how Americans are equipped to see anything beyond the simple act of electing Obama instead of
actually,
McCain.
I would argue with you there, Nicholas, and I think there was a great press conference that Ron Paul organized on Constitution Day of all days, where all the third parties spoke, and they said, we are the majority parties. because most people, you know, share our values and share our issues. And these are the things that the Republicans are not talking about. Most Americans are against the war. Most Americans are not for this financial looting of the country. And the big issues, those are the things that are not being said by the candidates and not addressed by the corporate media. Now, those candidates are shut out. And what I did learn as a candidate, it's been an educational process more than anything else, is that a very small percentage of people actually vote. And, of course, very few people have great confidence in our electoral system after witnessing two stolen elections and the fact that we still have these electronic voting machines. And this serves elite interests because the more helpless, apathetic people are, the more frightened they are, the easier they are to control. What scares them the most is people who feel empowered, who feel capable, who are assertive and courageous and organize and do things. And what we need to do, I think, is encourage more people to participate. And if people participated, we could throw these guys out. We could change the direction of the country. And it's a matter of getting information to people, energizing them, giving them hope, giving them things to do, or helping them realize what they can do.
I'm sorry, can I just say that, you know, we have to remember that four widows from New Jersey managed to force Washington, D.C. into creating a so-called independent bipartisan 9/11 commission, which was not independent, which was not bipartisan, but, you know, they managed to do it. That was four people. So imagine, you know, things are possible. We haven't stumbled across the formula yet.
Well, I think those women should be an inspiration to all of us, and they are. I mean, more and more people are doing things. Nick, we don't have much time left. You want to throw in your... Nick, are you still there? Uh-oh. I think we've lost Nick. But John, I would agree with you about the widows, and I would say Bob McElvain, that they should inspire everyone to speak up and show what just a small number of people can do.
Well, thank you, Carol, for tonight and having Nick on. I haven't heard from him in a long time.
Well, it's good to talk to him. I wish he was more optimistic, but I must admit, I think he watches probably too much television, and I think that is psychological warfare that's going on a massive scale, and it's hard
As I said, I mean, we've all gone through it to a certain extent, so it's hard not to sympathize.
Yeah.
Anyway, you have a good night, Carol.
Okay, thanks for joining us, John.